The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm to my great Oldenburg, Nathan Gladwell. No AAA today, but we got some heavy topics in college basketball, football, and maybe even NBA. All right, Gray, let's get right into it.
Yes, so let's talk about the college basketball news. Obviously, the big thing in college basketball right now is the transfer portal and recruiting and teams trying to reload and rebuild from what they had last year. And we got players trying to declare for the NBA draft and all sorts of madness around college basketball right now. Over 20% of NCAA Division I men's basketball players are in the transfer portal, which if you just think of that as crazy to think about. You think about 13 scholarships on each team, that's three or four players from each team on the transfer portal on the average. That's crazy. But let's start off by talking about Alabama. Alabama had one more guy enter the transfer portal since our last recording. It was Jaden Bradley. The freshman started 22 of the 37 games this year. His freshman season averaged 6.4 points and ranked second on the team with 3.1 assists. The 6'3", 185-pound point guard is in the transfer portal. Obviously, he is a big-time prospect, being a former McDonald's All-American and number four point guard in last year's class. Nathan, I'll start with you. What does this mean for Alabama?
Well, it's obvious that Jaden Bradley didn't really fit Nato's offense. Jaden Bradley didn't really develop an outside shot during the point of the season. He was definitely a slashing guard. And overall, you know, he has great potential. But for someone who can't shoot the ball in a Native's offense, he just wasn't going to see much playing time. And to be honest, I think it was one of the situations where Native's was straight up with him saying that if he didn't develop a jump shot, he wasn't getting a lot of playing time. And of course, Jaden Bradley, you know, being that guy, he can go anywhere in the country and really earn a starting spot. Any team would be lucky to have a guy like this. It's sad to see him go, but I understand why he's leaving.
Yeah, I think like Nathan mentioned, not having an outside shot was a big killer for him. So with J.D. Davidson last year, before Jaden Bradley came, struggled to get an outside shot, didn't really fit into Nato's offense. But like that kind of held him back at times, really only drive to the basket. Davidson's really just sit at the free throw line and force him to shoot a jump shot, kind of like they did for Ben Simmons in the NBA. I don't think Jaden Bradley would have fit next year, but it's going to be tough for Alabama to have to replace all these guards if people like Javon Quinterly and Mark Sears were to stay at the draft.
That's a good point right into the segue. We talked about on the last show, we talked about Javon Quinterly entering the draft and keeping his eligibility as college basketball players can do so. Mark Sears, the highly talented, regarded best, one of the best transfer acquisitions of any team last season for Alabama, the transfer from Ohio, has entered his name into the 2023 NBA draft while maintaining his college eligibility, which means he can come back after a certain deadline if he doesn't sign with an agent. This is an interesting one. Mark Sears averaged 12 points a game, 3 rebounds. He doesn't seem like a prototypical NBA point guard, as does Quinterly or Wendell Green for Auburn. There's shorter, you know, three-point shooting point guards that can handle the ball well. The NBA is kind of going a different direction than those guys, but it'd be interesting to see what kind of advice and things that Mark Sears hears from NBA teams. I always think doing this is the smartest thing that a guy like Sears can do. But Alex, I'll start with you on this one. I'm expecting him to come back. Are you as well? And what do you think this means for Sears and his future for the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I definitely think he's going to come back after getting feedback from all these scouts at the draft. I don't think he's ready. I think he needs another year in the Nato's offense. We saw at times where he struggled to hit the three ball. There was a stretch between beginning of the year to March where he just getting at the broadside of a barn shooting. I feel like he needs to get more consistent with that and coming back next year and probably being maybe the go-to guy if Javon Quinterly were to leave. I think Mark Sears would really benefit from that. If looking at a pro comp for him, I look at him and I see a guy in Jalen Brunson a little bit. a little short, stockier type of guard, really physical, gets up to you and plays defense and rebounds the ball pretty well. I think he'll benefit from coming back, but I would not be surprised if he were to stay in the draft, because you saw a guy like Jalen Brunson stay in the draft, and he was a second-round draft pick. Don't think Sears will be a second-round draft pick, probably go undrafted, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was to go in the second round.
Yeah, honestly, him and Javon Quinterly are in very, very similar situations. You look at, you know, the amount of potential both those people have. Obviously, there were stretches in the season, in the past season, where they both struggled to shoot the ball. Mark Sears definitely struggled more at times. I think there were a number of shows where Alex mentioned where him and Noah Clowney were just not playing up to the standard that we've seen them play at. And that's going to be one of the big things for NBA scouts is this player going to have consistency when he gets into the Nets level? And obviously with Mark Sears, I don't think he's up to that standard yet. So it would be the wisest decision for him to come back and keep developing his outside shot and just kind of work through the Natives offense and develop some more skills like playmaking that would help him stand out against other guards.
And so we've talked about two players and some player positionings that we've got going on in Alabama. Now let's talk about some coaching changes that we're going to have. All three of Nate Oates' assistant coaches have left to go be head coaches at smaller schools. You know, Charlie Henry is now the head coach at Georgia Southern. Antoine Pettway is now the head coach at Kennesaw State. And Brian Hogston is now the head coach at Arkansas State. Three coaches just moving on from the assistant job at Alabama to become head coaches. Doesn't that sound a little bit familiar with the football program, that what Nick Saban has done there? But this is interesting moves. You don't see this as often in college basketball as you do in college football, even with, you know, at Alabama and the Nick Saban football program. But these assistant coaches, they're like, well, I'm going to go use my talents, recruit my players, and go to a smaller school to try and find success. I think that's an absolutely amazing thing for them. Obviously, we'll be rooting for them at their respective schools. Nathan, do you have any thoughts on this? Are we reading in between the lines between this? Could this be an issue in Alabama's part or Nate Oates' part? Or is this just these coaches are going to go try and have success on their own?
I think it's definitely just going to be, you know, these coaches having success on their own. Obviously, it's going to be hard to replace these guys. You talk about a guy in Antoine Pettway, you know, who just lit a fire under these players this season and really got them going. Of course, you can talk about the adversity with the whole Brandon Miller situation. I think that having him as an assistant coach really helped them get past that at times. So that's one of the intangibles that, you know, you kind of are just going to miss whenever you're going to find another assistant head coach. For these guys, I mean, obviously, I think every single one of them is going to do a great job at their respective schools. I couldn't be happier to see them reach that situation. But it's going to be very, very hard to replace them.
Yeah, I kind of expected these guys to leave after the season, the way that Alabama played and how they contributed. I look at a guy in Brian Hodgson, who was lead recruiting class coordinator to get guys like Brandon Miller, Noah Clowney, Jaden Bradley. That's a really big loss for Nate Oates. It's going to be hard to replace him and Charlie Henry and Antoine Pettlow as well. I think it's going to be a really tough loss, especially with all these players in the portal and the draft. I mean, this is like a total roster coaching overhaul for Nate Oates. If he can rebuild it, that'll be a great job for him, but I just don't know how he's going to be able to find the success he had this season with all these changes to his coaching staff and roster. But I wish all three of these guys the best of luck, and hopefully they find success.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nato's already starting to try and rebuild that coaching staff under him with the addition of Nicholas State head coach Austin Clonch. Joins the Alabama staff. He went 90-61 over five seasons with Nicholas State. He's one of the premier rising stars in the college basketball coaching profession. He was the youngest coach in Division I basketball this past year at 33 years of age. Now he moves up in the ladder to the assistant coaching job in the SEC for the Crimson Tide. Nathan, what do you think about this acquisition under Oates?
I mean, obviously it's very hard to pull any head coach to come be an assistant coach from any school, I would say. So for Nato being able to do that and convince Austin Clunch to come join his Alabama squad, I think that's pretty highly touted of him. Obviously, I mean, he knows how to win. I think that Nato's definitely saw someone, something in Austin to want to bring him to Alabama. I think that, you know, he's a similar guy to how Antoine Petway coached. So kind of filling that role. Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see how he does that season.
Yeah, I think this is a big splash for Nato. It's getting a former head coach to be an assistant coach. If you look at it, it was probably more of a, this guy's going to get a raise in salary. He only made $130,000 last year. And Hodgson, who's now the head coach of Arkansas State, made $425,000. So I think that's probably a big motivator there. But also being an assistant coach under Nato, it's at Alabama. We saw it already. It's led to pretty high-tier head coaching jobs. I know Nicholls State is, you know, sort of up there, but it's not as great as places like Kennesaw State, Arkansas State, Georgia Southern. I think Austin Clouch will provide really good stuff for Nate Oates in this Alabama Crimson Tide roster next season.
So moving on to talk about the Auburn Tigers. Two things that happened for Auburn this week, two very big things. They get an incoming transfer, Denver Jones from Florida International. Denver Jones averaged 20 points a game this past season on 37% from three and 84% from the free throw line. The 6'4 guard will be able to fill that gap left by Zeb Jasper, Wendell Green. Auburn gets the knockdown shooter and the score that they've been needing and wanting. I think it'll be very interesting to see what position he ends up playing. I think that determines what happens with the roster from now on, being with Aiden Holloway and Denver Jones now coming into that backcourt. I think that could be a really dangerous backcourt in the SEC. Alex, I'll start with you on this one. What do you think about this acquisition for the Tigers?
Yeah, this is a great get for Bruce Pearl. Denver Jones, very, very efficient when he shoots the ball, very effective. He's very consistent as well. We saw it at times at Auburn. The guard play was very inconsistent, especially with Wendell Green Jr. There's games where he'd go 10 for 15, the games where he'd go 0 for 8. I think getting a guy in Denver Jones to come in and replace the output Wendell Green had for the Tigers this season will be huge. I think the backcourt of Aiden Holloway and Denver Jones probably be one of the top ones in the SEC, maybe even in the country. I think this was great for the Tigers.
Obviously, consistency is huge. Bring anyone who can shoot the ball efficiently will definitely do wonders for your team. A guy like Denver Jones, who he's a little taller than Wendell Green, standing at 6'4". He's definitely going to add length to this backcourt that Auburn desperately needed last season, where Wendell Green kind of struggled to guard kind of these bigger guards, like Jane Bradley, for example. So to bring in not only efficient scoring, but to bring in some length will definitely help this Auburn team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this roster shapes up for Auburn from this point forward until November, pretty much. I think the only two positions that are completely stuck in right now are point guard and center, being that the two point guards are Aiden Holloway and Trey Donaldson, and then the two centers being Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell returning. We don't know if Jalen Williams or Alan Flanagan are returning or not. I would expect Alan to go to the draft and Jalen Williams to come back. That's just my opinion. I think that's what's going to happen. But being able to fill the voids of Yoan Traore, Chance Westry leaving, Wendell Green leaving, I mean, that's – Zeb Jasper leaving, that's going to be tough for Bruce Pearl, but getting a guy like Jones is a great, great start into refilling those holes. But the second thing that happened for Auburn this week is assistant coach Wes Flanagan, an Auburn legacy, leaves for an assistant job to Ole Miss. He goes and he'll be the first assistant coach marked under Chris Beard. Chris Beard getting that job after being relieved of his duties at Texas midseason this past year. I think this is a relationship thing. Wes Flanagan and Chris Beard have a very close personal relationship, close family relationship. I think this was an opportunity for Flanagan to get under Beard maybe a year or two and then move on to the head coaching job. We've been wondering if he was going to do that in the recent future. With a guy like Stephen Pearl being the presumed successor for Bruce inevitably when he retires. But I think this is an interesting move. This also affects what Alan Flanagan does. He has one more year. He can use his COVID year of eligibility. He can go to the draft or transfer. We have not heard from him yet. I assumed it was waiting on something with his dad, Wes, but now we know that Wes is going to Ole Miss. Alex, what is your reaction to this?
I think it's definitely a step down for Wes Flanagan. Don't think Ole Miss is a premier program like Auburn. I understand, like you said, Gray, with the relationship with Chris Beard going that way, but I don't think it's going to bring him any more success than he had at Auburn, maybe even less. But you look at Alan Flanagan, his son, I think this kind of warrants that he's probably either going to go to the draft or transfer to Ole Miss. Don't think he comes back to Auburn next season. But great move for Wes if he's with a relationship with Chris Beard. Don't agree it was the step up, but it's his decision.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty certain that Alan Flanagan leaves for the draft. Obviously, money is going to be a big issue for him. But on the off chance he does come back, he's definitely going to transfer to Ole Miss and go with his dad. You speak on the relationship that Chris Beard has with Wes Flanagan. It's very important for Chris Beard to have these types of relationships to kind of build a team at Ole Miss. I know, like you said, Alex, you're not a premier program like a school like Auburn, but they definitely have a very, very high potential. I think that Chris Beard is doing a great job already with bringing Wes Flanagan in. So it's going to be interesting to see how this Ole Miss team performs next year.
All right, moving on to talk about more things that are happening in the transfer portal. We had some commitments this past week of some big name guys. You had former North Carolina guard Caleb Love transferred to Michigan. You had former Arizona guard Kerr Kiesla, I believe is how you say his name, to West Virginia. You had former Baylor guard LJ Cryer go to Houston. Former Houston guard Tremont Mark go to Arkansas. Former Tulane guard Jalen Cook to go to LSU. Former TCU guard Ace Baldwin will go to Penn State. And former Delaware guard Jameer Nelson Jr. will go to TCU. And former Notre Dame guard J.J. Starling will go to Syracuse. Alex, I'll start with you. I have an idea of which one you're wanting to talk about here, but who which one of these surprised you and which one of these intrigues you the most?
Yeah, I think the Caleb Love transferring from UNC to Michigan, it surprises me the most, intrigues me the most. Nathan, you have people like John Von Quinterly with his turnovers, poor shooting at times. And multiply that by about 1,000, and you get Caleb Love. It's like watching somebody that thinks he's in the NBA play at college. He hucks up shots that I don't even know what he's thinking. There's times where he's covered by like 3 people, it feels like, and he just throws something up. It's just hard for me to watch him game in and game out. It gives me a headache, migraines. I'm glad he's gone from UNC. I wish him the best of luck at Michigan. But he's not what I thought he was going to be in North Carolina. I think he was a cancer to the team last year, the way he shot the ball. How much does he like? He was like a black hole on the offensive end. I'm glad he's gone.
That was building up for a while there, Alex. I think to talk about the biggest pickup, I think Houston picking up LJ Cryer had his time at Baylor. I mean, obviously he was the second option on the team, shooting 42%. Making 42% of his 3-point attempts. So he's a very efficient shooting wise. And he just brings another aspect of good hustle to the team. I know he's only 6'1". Kelvin Sampson does a great job with player development, and it's going to be interesting to see LJ Cryer be taken to this next level.
Yeah, for me, I really am interested in the Tremont Mark move to go to Arkansas from Houston. Obviously, he's a guy who is in the NBA draft, pre-draft process right now that could elect him to just go to the draft and not go back to Arkansas, but he did announce that he would transfer to Arkansas if he decided to come back to college. And I think that's a very interesting fit with him being a bigger guard and the month of March that he had towards the end of the season for Houston, especially the 3 games in the tournament that they played, were he proved that he can be one of the lead guys on a team, even though he wasn't for Houston this past year. So I think that'd be a very interesting fit with Arkansas, especially with Eric Musselman, who really thrives with his transfers. Some other guys that are in the portal right now, you got Hunter Dickinson, the Michigan center. You got Max Abesmith, which is the Oral Roberts guard. You got Kalel Ware, a center out of Oregon. Ryan Nimhard, the Creighton guard. Harrison Ingram, the Stanford forward. You got Tyler Perry, the North Texas. Sevier Wheeler, the guard from Kentucky. And Oliver Nwankwo. The Tennessee forward, who I think is a very intriguing player. Alex, I'll start with you. Which one of these guys are you expecting to commit soonest? Where do you think they're going to go? Which one intrigues you the most?
Yeah, the one that probably intrigues me the most is the guard from North Texas, Tyler Perry. He beat out Jelly Walker for the Conference USA Player of the Year this season. I think he's a really good player. Definitely went under the radar with North Texas, them not making the tournament. I think if they did, he would have been probably one of the better guards you saw play in that tournament, in the NCAA tournament. Really efficient. His coach is now at Texas Tech, Grant McCollin. I would not be surprised if he followed him there. That's my expectation. I think it'll be a great addition to McCollin's roster as he rebuilds Texas Tech after the fiasco with their former head coach.
For me, it had to be Kalel Ware from Oregon. Obviously, he had a visit set up to go to Alabama, but he canceled that this weekend. I think he's trended more towards Indiana, if anything. But you talk about a guy who's 7 foot. He is a rim protector, but has also shown signs of developing an outside shot. I think that was the most interesting thing for me. Obviously, having a stretch big on the floor adds just a whole another level of spacing to any team. So I think any team who picks up Kalel Ware is going to have a great time.
Yeah, there are a lot of good centers in the portal right now, but I don't think there's any better than Hunter Dickinson from Michigan. He's a very interesting prospect that we haven't really seen in the transfer portal in recent years, being how experienced he is and how good he was as a prospect coming out of high school into college. But he's gotten so much better with his game. His game is trending more towards the perimeter now. He's a very good passer, very good in the post, really good defender at 7'1" and a big frame. I think it'd be very interesting to see what kind of fit that he ends up with out of the transfer portal. All right, Alex, what do we got for the NBA discussion here in this one?
Yep, so this past week we wrapped up the regular season, set the play-in picture and the playoff picture as well. With that wrapping up, we're going to do our award predictions for all the regular season awards. Start with MVP. Got really a two-man race between Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. Can include a guy in Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I think we're going to all agree here that it's between Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. Who do y'all have taking home this award?
I think that Joel Embiid is a clear-cut winner at this point. I think that after his like 50-point game that he just kind of said, this is my award, I'm taking it home. I think the main thing is that Jokic has won, you know, the best two. So you obviously have to look at voter fatigue there. But as far as numbers, I don't think that a guy in Jokic, he obviously puts up less points than Embiid, but he does almost average a triple-double. I think that's his main argument. But I think in this case, Joel Embiid's going to win.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's about time Joel Embiid ends up winning this award finally. I do think there's a little bit of with this of not wanting to give Nikola Jokic a third straight MVP, considering that he was 0.2 assists away from averaging a triple-double. I mean, that's unbelievable, especially when your team ends up as the first seed in the West. You kind of just think about that and you're like, well, he should probably win the MVP. But then you look at Joel Embiid's numbers, averaging well over 30 points a game, 10 rebounds, almost two blocks a game, and his team had an even better record. This has got to be Embiid's award.
Yeah, I'm making a clean sweep here. I think Embiid wins it. The way, like Nathan mentioned, he had that 50 piece the other night, really solidified his slot in this award, and having the vote fatigue of Nikola Jokic winning the past two is probably a big deal as well. All right, moving on, Rookie of the Year, probably a three-man race here. You got Paolo Banchero, rookie for the Orlando Magic, Nathan's favorite rookie, Jalen Williams, from Oklahoma City, and then Walker Kessler, former Auburn player, the rookie in Utah. Out of these three guys, who do you have taking home this award?
I think it's got to be Paolo Banchero. Obviously, I want to say Jalen Williams, but just Paolo being the bigger name, he's had a lot more usage this season. He obviously averages more points, And obviously, for what he's done for the Magic, he's done a great job. This award hadn't been like a whole year award. If you would have just started taking counts in February, then this would have been Jalen Williams' award all the way through. But just because of what Powell has been able to do throughout the whole entire season, I think this is his award to lose.
I agree. I think this is, just like Nathan said, this is Paolo's award to lose. This award shouldn't be given to anybody else, but you cannot describe the kind of impact that Jalen Williams and Walker Kessler had on their teams this year. I mean, Jalen Williams, just like Nathan said, if this award was started in February and you counted from February till now, I do think this is Jalen Williams' award to lose. The way he's been playing, the way that he's kind of led him and Gilgeous Alexander have kind of upbooted the Thunder into the play-in. And then Walker Kessler, his defensive presence, and he's the first in field goal percentage is 72%, over two blocks a game this year, considering what he had to go through on draft night. I mean, he wore the Memphis Grizzlies hat as he went up to shake Adam Silver's hand, was traded to the Timberwolves, and then was traded in the Rudy Gobert trade. I think that will go down as one of the worst trades ever, considering what Walker Kessler did for the Utah Jazz and what kind of potential he has. But I agree, this is Paolo's award to lose.
Yeah, I definitely expect Paolo Banchero to win this award. One thing I look at him, he's very inefficient, had the high volume, not efficient with it. I think if Jalen Williams was put in the same situation, he'd have been doing a lot better than Paolo. But I would have voted for Jalen Williams if I was voting for this award. Obviously, I'm not. But I think the voters are going to go with Banchero here, and he's going to take home the Rookie of the Year. All right, moving on. Defensive Player of the Year. There's a few names here. There's Nicholas Claxton, Evan Mobley. But I think the two names people are going to come down to are going to be Jaren Jackson, the forward at Memphis, and then Brook Lopez, the big man in Milwaukee. Who do y'all have winning this award?
This is Jaren Jackson's award. I don't think anyone comes close. I like the way that Brook Lopez, he's a great defensive anchor for the Bucks team, but you just can't deny what Jaren Jackson Jr. has been able to do all season long, and that's protect the rim. Not only doing that, but to get steals in the lanes. A guy who just takes over a game, who forces a lot of turnovers, and really on the defensive end, you don't want to be anywhere near him as an offensive player. I mean, the ball doesn't come near as much to him anymore than it did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, you're right, Nathan. This is Jaren Jackson's award to lose. Averaging three blocks per game is absolutely absurd. But again, it's not just his rim protection that is the reason that he's got this award. That's what it was with Rudy Gobert for years. But now it was his defensive presence. When he was on the floor, the Memphis Grizzlies defense was just better. And in that 19 games that he missed this season, they weren't as good. When he was on the floor, it was just different. That's the kind of impact that's going to get him this award, nevertheless, than his him averaging a steal per game and three blocks per game, which ranked first.
Yeah, I'm making a clean sweep here again. Jaren Jackson Jr., like Alf mentioned, had the biggest impact of any guy on the defensive end of the floor. But one thing to look at, he only played 63 games, that he would not be eligible to win the Defensive Player of the Year under the new collective bargaining agreement. Obviously, it's not in effect as of now, so Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to take it home. All right, for the Sixth Man of the Year, really a three-man race again. I got Malcolm Brogdon, Emmanuel Quickley, Norman Powell. Out of those three guys, or if there's another guy y'all look at, who wins this award?
Yeah, I think that Norm Powell should really be considered to win this award. And I think for a stretch, you can talk about Russell Westbrook winning this award. The amount of times he came off the bench for the Lakers, and of course, now being on the Clippers, he's come off the bench a little bit. And he's been very, very effective at what he's done just because of what his time on the Lakers. I think that has affected his chance of winning this award for the most part. But you look at a guy like Norman Powell, who provides a spark off the bench, averaging close to 17 points a game, three rebounds and two assists, a guy who really provides just an extra level of scoring. I really think that he is miles ahead of Emmanuel Quickley and Malcolm Brogdon. But to speak on either of these other two guys winning, I think Malcolm Brogdon makes a good case, averaging close to 15 points a game and shooting a career high from the three, 44%.
I have to disagree, Nathan. The first disagreement that we're going to have. I love Emmanuel quickly, man. He's so much better in the pros than he ever was at college. He was really good at Kentucky, but he's so much better now. Him and Tyrese Maxey, they're the same player, and I cannot believe they were on the same team at Kentucky because they really are the same player. His ability to handle the ball, get by people with as easily as you can, but also be able to shoot from the outside, average almost 15 points a game and 4 rebounds per game off the bench. In the last 10 games of the season, he bumped that up to 22 points a game. Even the last 2 games of the year, to get the Knicks the 5 seed? I mean, getting the Knicks the 5 seed, he averaged like 35 points a game. That's turning it up at the right time. I think quickly has as much of an argument as Brogdon and Powell do to win this award.
Yeah, I think if it was starting, if the end of the voted at All-Star break, I think Norman Powell wins it. But he missed most of March with a shoulder injury, kind of took a hit to his chances of winning it here. I think my prediction would be Malcolm Brogdon. He's the best sixth man on the second best team in the East. I think that's a big thing for him, like Nathan mentioned, shooting a career high from 3-point. And Gray, I know you love Emmanuel quickly, but the reason he had all those points was because he was starting and placing some injuries there in New York. I think that's a big issue for Manu Quickly if they were to give him the sixth man of the year, is his stats are kind of inflated because he got to start a few games at the end of the season. It's going to be Malcolm Brogdon, who was easily the best sixth man, in my opinion, on one of the best teams in the league. All right. So we got the most improved player of the year. You can have a lot of names here, but I kind of picked out 4. There's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the guard for the Thunder. There's Lauri Markkanen, the forward for the Utah Jazz. Jalen Brunson, the guard for the New York Knicks. And Mikal Bridges, the forward for the Brooklyn Nets. Any of these guys stick out to y'all to win this award?
And I mean, I think that, all 4 of these guys really have a great case to win. Obviously my mind goes right to Lauri Markkanen, what he's been able to do for the Jazz. Obviously, he was really restricted with what he was able to do at Cleveland, and he just blossomed into such a great player, obviously making his first All-Star appearance this season. You look at a guy in Jalen Brunson who was traded from the Mavs, he's really just developed into this great guard for the Knicks. He's been a real big scorer for him, averaging 24 points a game. And then you talk about a guy in Mikal Bridges who, whose situation didn't look great after being traded from the Suns, but he's really turned his situation around for playing for the Nets, averaging 27 points a game and shooting 37% from 3. So really, you can make an argument for all 3 of those guys, but I'm not going to ignore the biggest person, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who has just become the biggest scorer for this Thunder team, who has carried them in pretty much every single game this season, averaging 31 points a game, close to 5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, and he shoots really, really efficient. I believe he has the 4th best efficiency in the league, behind Embiid and some other people. So the amount of impact a guy like Shai makes on a team like the Thunder, he's brought them into the play-in. And going forward, I think that, it's one of those situations. He is the key piece for this team.
Yeah, if Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic and a lot of those guys didn't have these dominant center type of seasons with their teams being top of the league and that sort of thing, we were looking at based off of efficiency and scoring and what the true meaning of most valuable player means. I think we'd be talking about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as an MVP season instead of a most improved player season. But you can be talking about both, considering he bumped his point average almost 8 points a game and getting the Thunder in the playoffs and bumping his shooting percentages at like 6%. That's just very, very impressive what he was able to do this year. But for this award specifically, I've got to go with Lauri Markkanen, man. What he just like Nathan said, he looked restricted when he was at Cleveland and when he was at Chicago. He looked like he was trying to be that 4-man role player that needed like 2 or 3 other superstars at the guard positions to be successful. But this season with the Jazz, he looked like the main guy for Utah going forward, averaging just under 26 points and 9 rebounds a game, shooting 40% from 3. And that's as good of a season as we've seen from a four-man in Utah, I mean, since Karl Malone, to be honest with you. But I think he's got a bright, bright future ahead of him. We could be talking about that could be the new star for the Utah Jazz. But speaking on these other guys as well, just like Nathan said, all four of these guys have arguments and great cases to win this award. Jalen Brunson, what he was able to do at the New York Knicks after being traded from the Mavs, is, I mean, that is crazy. And then Mikal Bridges, considering what all he's gone through, especially this season when he got with the New York with the Brooklyn Nets, averaging 27 points a game, he took his game to the next level at that point. And I think we're, in a few years, we could have an argument if Kevin Durant doesn't win a championship for the Phoenix Suns, we could have an argument that the Brooklyn Nets may have won that Kevin Durant trade. So, but for this award alone, I'm going to go with Lauri Markkanen.
I have to agree with Nathan here. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wins this award. I think before the season, he's kind of looking on the outside in of being one of the top 25 players in the league. I think this season he's really solidified himself as maybe a top five talent. He's definitely the engine that keeps the Thunder going. I think he's greatly improved. He's moved up to be one of the top point guards in the league. Give me Shai here. Like y'all mentioned, the other three guys, Markkanen, Brunson, and Bridges, have great arguments to win this award, but Shai just had a bigger impact and improved the most, in my opinion. All right, with the playoffs starting this week, guys, who do you have taking home the NBA championship?
Gosh, that is such a hard question to ask. I think with all the close races in the West, it's hard not to say that the Suns are going to come out of the West. And gosh, for the East, he has so many great teams. I think that I want to say the Sixers come out of the East, but they've had a lot of problems in the playoffs in the past. So go ahead and give me the Suns and the Bucks in the championship for another straight year. I think that the Suns are probably going to win the championship this year.
I like that. If look, this is one of these years that there are out of these 10 teams that are out of these 20 teams that are in the playoff, 10 for each conference, there are maybe 15 or 16 that could win the whole thing. I genuinely have real cases to win the whole thing. And this is an interesting one. The East is very interesting because I think if the top three come out of the East, they could be scary. You got the Bucks, the Celtics, and the 76ers there. And then the West, I mean, you could be talking about anybody coming out of the West and being scary as well. I'm going to go with the Bucks come out of the East as well. I really like the way that they've been playing lately. If they're healthy and stay healthy, they are very, very good, especially with Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo's defense. And that's a championship-built team, as we've seen in the past. But I really like the Denver Nuggets as well, the way they've been playing this season. The young talent that they got on that team, if they shoot the ball well from the outside, they're a hard team to beat. But I'm going to go with the Nuggets and the Bucks in the finals and the Milwaukee Bucks to take it all.
All right, I'm going to go with the Boston Celtics winning all, best team in the league in my opinion, then the record didn't reflect it, and I think they got the best bench in the league. All right, fellas, all the time we got for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.